Hey everybody, this is Randy Gloss and you're listening to Help Me Understand, a Gloss Rags Media co-original podcast. It's been a while, but season 3 is here and we're already making some changes. The biggest one is that Naima Jordan, my co-host, has moved on. She's got a new gig. She's out here grinding in the world, and I'm super happy for her. So shout out to Naima for everything that she contributed to the show, all the love, all the insight, the laughter. It's been a good ride, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next. Another change is that we want to bring Help Me Understand to you more. So what that means is starting in July, we're going to be dropping 2 episodes a month. So that's something to look forward to. And lastly, now that I'm flying solo, I'm going to need some folks to come along with me for the ride. I have a guest sitting next to me. I'm really excited to introduce him to y'all. But before that, I just want to say, let me know what you want to hear and who you want to hear on the show. I'm open to it. So hit us up, yo@glossrags.com, or you can tweet me, slide in my DMs @RandyGloss, and I'll make sure that we try and give you guys what you want to hear. We are back. This is Randy Gloss, and I am so thrilled to have my brother, my homie in the studio, Mr. Adrian Walker. What's good, A?
In here.
Adrian, if you had to pick 3 words to describe yourself or what you do.
Doesn't have to be 3 words.
No, it doesn't have to.
You didn't tell me this before, I would have studied.
It's okay.
3 words. 3 words. 3 words. 3 words. I'm about to cheat. Because I actually wrote this down before already. 3 words. Okay. 3 words. Achiever, context, relator.
Achiever, context, and relator.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask you about that. But Adrian Walker is a photographer.
Yeah, I would say photographer. I feel like creative. I'm going to speak for myself, but on top of knowing a lot of different creators, get caught up in what to call themselves. Always getting caught up in like the language and, you know, just trying to twist and turn words and make it sound like you this, you that. And I understand. I understand it's one of those things where we all do a lot of different things. So you kind of want to be everything, but you want to use that one word. And then that one word is just like, but am I really that? And it's just like you get caught up in it. So I'm a photographer that does a whole lot of other shit.
And one of those things, which is the first thing we're going to talk about, is black women over breathing.
Yep.
You're right. I didn't even know you had tan shirts. Did I miss that?
No, these are coming out.
Okay. You always got,
soon.
I mean,
yeah.
You make the new shit, so you got it first, obviously.
Yeah, I got some stuff coming.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So talk to us. Talk to us about what black women over breathing is. Where did that come from?
So black women over breathing, I actually just tweeted it. I think this was in 2006. Ooh, dang, time be flying, man. 2016, I tweeted black women over breathing after I saw the photo of Lanisha Evans in Baton Rouge. The woman who, for those who don't know, the woman who in Baton Rouge during the protest, she was standing in the middle of the street in this damn RoboCop. That's exactly what he looked like. He had all his armor on. She was just standing there as he was grabbing at her, and she looked like Storm. She, like, and we have a lot of photos out here showing how powerful black women are that don't get the love they need. Like, I ain't gonna tell y'all my next shirt because I almost gave my $1 million shit away. You know what I'm saying? So, if you listening, come soon.
She looked incredible. I think it was like a green dress, and it had it was like flowing in the wind.
It looked staged. It almost looked staged, and I had to like really like look it up. I was like, is this real? Like, this shit looks staged. Damn! Shout out to the photographer who I think was white. He might be white because I don't know. If you ain't white, shout out to you, photographer, who shot that photo. But yeah. I did drop her name. I hope I said it right. I think it's Laisha Evans.
Okay.
L-E-S-H-I-A Evans. Anyways, after I saw that, I just tweeted that. And then it wasn't a viral tweet or nothing like that, honestly. It didn't even I don't think it went far, and I don't care if it did or whatever, but folks was like, hey, you should put this on a shirt. And I was like, here we go with this putting on a shirt shit again, you know. And then I don't know what made me actually do it, but I did. I ended up putting on the shirt, but I was only going to do it for during Black History Month of 2016 and not make any more. So after I did that, they sold out. I was getting hit up a lot.
How many did you make?
I don't even remember. Probably like, I want to say the golden number was probably 50.
Okay.
Yeah, probably like 50.
Started out with around 50 tees.
Yeah. And I swear I wasn't going to do it again. And then this woman, after a few times like of saying, no, I'm not, they're gone, this woman hit me up on Facebook, and she went in on me low-key. She was like, how are you going to make such a positive thing and just end it? You know, it's, you know, we this stuff is needed, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was crazy. And I was like, after the conversation, this is via Facebook Messenger, I said, because it's mine? Like, I didn't really know what to say. And then it was just like, it's a lot to it. You know, I didn't really feel like explaining myself about the reason why. I just didn't want to continue on because it's a lot of labor and all that stuff. I mean, yeah. You know how it is. You make shirts. Shit is hard.
Absolutely.
And it's expensive. And it's like a thing. It's like, you know, you get profit, but at the same time, that profit goes into making more unless you like really, really popping. So I'm not like selling shirts to a capacity like I'm making, like I can live off of it.
Right.
And like I said, that wasn't even my goal. And it's also, still not my goal.
Which I'm sure you felt is that sometimes when you start making things, then people don't view you as a person. They just want what that thing that it is that you make.
Yeah. And it kind of turned into that. But at the same time, I found a way to keep it going by not only just selling merch, you know, tote bags, and recently did like a pillowcase, a satin pillowcase for the hair.
We're gonna talk about that.
It was crazy. That was cool. I did a couple of cool things, but then the coolest thing I did was curate art and shows for Black women artists.
But before we talk about the show, I want to go back a little bit. So what really, aside from that lady kind of coming for your neck, what really made you decide, okay, I'm gonna keep printing these tees?
Honestly, her. It was her. It was her. It was her. I ended up sending her like a care package after that. I just felt that, I guess, I didn't know it meant so much. And then my homie, John, he was saying like, man, this is really fire. Every time I wear this shirt, it gets so much attention. I never wore a shirt that gets so much attention. Like, people like what this says, like the meaning behind it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people kind of didn't know what it meant.
And what does it mean?
So Black women over breathing basically simply means without Black women, we wouldn't be breathing. And I put, you know, like Black align breathing. And so people read like Black breathing or Black women breathing, or they think it's like Black women are breathing. We are breathing. So it's like some folks are making up their own definitions, but they rock with it.
Mm-hmm.
And some folks know exactly what it means, you know, and they rock with it. And I'm happy with both. But, like, you know, without y'all, you know, I wouldn't be shit. Honestly, you know, I mean, I literally came from a Black woman. Yeah. So.
But what is the difference? Because you know how, like, sometimes I feel like if I'm trying to not even just, like, check a dude, but just have a conversation with them, and they might feel defensive or something. One of the defenses that I hear often is, oh, well, you know, I was raised by all women.
That's always it. I can't speak for everybody. My mom passed away when I was 10. I was a mama's boy. I knew who I liked and knew how I wanted. I mean, knew who I was going to, who I listened to. After that, my sister was taking care of me. My dad was around, but it was like my sister was like the next greatest person to my mama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so obviously that's part of the reason. Hell, like Black women photographers and artists are like who I look up to. A lot of them I look up to. It's just kind of like where my background is like from Black women and like what Black women have done and what they continue to do. It's why I'm like so black women driven. That was tight.
Yeah. And you have a daughter now, which we're going to talk about later.
Yeah.
When we talk about fatherhood. So mm-hmm. I'm really excited to have you here. Yeah, we'll be back. All right, so you started to tell us about, so basically, to recap, you tweeted it out, you eventually decided to put on a shirt, then you didn't want to put it on no more shirts, then you did, and then you started to tell us about how you then curated an art show, a beautiful art show, which I was there, and...
Well, you were at the second one.
The second one, yeah, so tell me about the first. Tell everyone about the first.
The first, so I curated an art show back home in St. Louis, where I'm originally from. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. But I knew I needed help with this. So I hit my friend up, a good friend of mine, Danny McCoy. She's like another big sister. She's amazing, a crazy dope artist in St. Louis. Her and her husband, Kevin McCoy, they are Work Play. That's their name of their entity, Work Play. And I wouldn't even know how to describe it. Like multidisciplinary artists. They are amazing, insane. And I asked Danielle, could she help me with this? And she was thrilled with the idea. So the reason why I thought about this is because there's a lot of young black artists out there who just don't, you know, they're really good at their craft. But when it comes down to like artist statement and piecing together a show and all that type of stuff, it's pretty hard. Even for me, sometimes I need help with this stuff. You know, it's pretty hard. I just want to shoot photos and that's it. And I understand, like, being the creative, you just want to do that type of stuff, and the paperwork, all this stuff is like something else. So I hit Danielle up, huge help. 12 black women artists from St. Louis, let's go. It happened. It was insane. The turnout was crazy. We had everybody in the show, from photographers, illustrators, designers, clay artists. It was a lot. It was dope. It was all mediums. Fashion. We had some fashion there. It was crazy. But the craziest thing was the fact that a couple of the artists sold work.
Mm.
And that was major, because it was like we curated a show that, first off, we helped some of the, like, all the women in the show are exceptionally great. Some of them never had been in the show. Some has been in a few shows. And that was just dope to have, like, this mixed breed of artists in this position.
And they're all from St. Louis?
All from St. Louis. And one of them, I think couple of them sold work. That was tight, you know, mm-hmm. to be able to like sell work and put money into their pockets, you know. That was the whole reason behind it. So that was a big turnout.
And this was what point during 2016?
This is 2017, actually.
2017, okay. Yeah, 2017. I didn't realize you did both in the same year.
Yep.
Okay, wow.
Because I did that in July, and then I turned around. Was it June or July? I think it was July. And I turned around and did another one in September, October, at Betty Ono,
mm-hmm.
here in Oakland, California. I think it was about 10 or 11 artists or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And another friend of mine, Kiara Johnson, sold work. And Yetunde, she sold her whole damn wall.
Yeah.
You know, and they both, everybody in the show is crazy talented.
And you took all the portraits, right?
I took all the portraits of the artists. Yeah.
So if you go and if you want to follow Black Woman Over Breathing, it is literally just that, at Black Woman Over Breathing on Instagram. And if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see these beautiful assembly of black and white portraits. And so those are all. Did you take portraits for the first show too?
Nope. Okay. I wish. I thought about this after the fact.
You can always, you know.
I can always go back and do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's all these portraits of the women that were, you know, co-curators of the show. an artist. And it was just so beautiful. It was really dope. I was really, you know, obviously because of the work that I do with Gloss Rags, really touched by, they kind of look like blue bandanas with black women who've been, you know, killed. So that piece really struck me.
That was Danny's piece. Danny had a piece with all of, with not all, but a nice amount of women who were killed due to police violence.
Mm-hmm.
And she had these streamed across the ceiling at Bediono, and they were like above you. So it's basically, I look at that piece, it's like our angels are watching over us.
Mm.
And it was like, that piece was just like, it's insane.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. Cause she
screen print
pressed those, hand pressed those. And it was insane.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
It's a beautiful piece.
And you had Kiera, who I love.
It's called Say Her Name.
Say Her Name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was, and what was that experience like? You know, what was it, if you could compare and contrast the experiences that you had, you know, creating and sort of presenting Black women over breathing to a larger scale to the community in St. Louis, and then how it felt and what that process was like in Oakland, and how you had even seen, you know, because, you know, when they made the iPhone update and you could take a screenshot and then scribble on your screenshot, I was messing with you and I was like, you need to put this in your bio, link in bio. Like,
yeah, man, shout out to Randy, man. Look, y'all, I be fucking up. And I think I moved too fast and just been paying attention, but Randy be catching everything. Like, if y'all need an editor, and, hey, she charged $20 a word. Like, get at her, because she'll catch that comma.
Yeah, so, you know, in between the two shows, right, you had created the Instagram, you continued to sell merchandise, and so the concept was spreading, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or really, it's more like a mantra than it is a concept.
She put me on. Look, y'all, I'm about to go change the bio right now, right on the podcast, live.
So it was spreading, and so what was happening for you? What were you noticing about how people were relating to what you created as it was reaching outside of St. Louis, making its way to Oakland, obviously, and different places? It's so crazy to see, like, damn, I got an order from, like, what's a crazy place where you had an order come in from?
The craziest place I had an order from was Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible how it travels. But yeah, what was going on for you with that?
I gotta keep going or do more. And it's scary because it's like, dang, man, like, it's a lot going on in my life now. It's only me. Well, my wife helps out, but then I have friends that help out too. Danny helps out, but Danny has a kid. I have a kid now. And I just felt like, what else I can do? And I just, you know, let me go back. I'm sorry for doing this. Another reason why it was really hard for me to really continue doing this, because I didn't want to catch that flack of, it's like, it's always a Black man doing something. And I'm not saying, like, this is how it goes, but I didn't want to get looked at as, like, I'm making profit off Black women.
Mm-hmm.
And so before I did this, to confirm, I hit up the most important people in my life, women, Black women in my life at the time, like, how do you feel about this? Blah, blah, blah. Shiraz Gorman was probably number one. Well, Morgan was number one, of course, my wife. Shiraz, that's my mentor. And, you know, just different people, asking them, how do they feel about this? Because I'm not looking to make money from this. That's not the goal. And then now it's like, I want to, so that's why I was hard. Honestly, I was scared. Mm. I was scared. And I only got hit up one time about, like, the whole, like, it just looks like you're trying to make money. And she wasn't even Black.
Well.
And I'm like, man, first off, you don't even know me like that. I, that's all I say. I didn't, with no disrespect, I explained it to her. You know, I had everything lined up, ready for this. This one time, and that's the only time that happened to me.
Right.
Just that one time. And that's what I was afraid of.
Yeah. Just to cut in real quick, if y'all hear some rustling and some noises in the background, we're broadcasting live from East Oakland. We are indoors and outdoors at the same time. So don't be alarmed.
Listen to the beautiful sounds of East Oakland, California.
See, now the birds stop talking when we stop talking. That's cool. But yeah, talk to me, just going back a little bit. You know, that is a challenging thing to, to create something and then you're therefore responsible for it. You can't really pass it off. To me, I wouldn't feel right ever like passing off Glossarax to anybody else because that's my baby, you know? Right. The vision and the purpose behind it, I understand that very intimately, and no one will ever be able to understand it that way in the same way. I mean, I think that like you, Black Women Over Breathing is incredibly relatable and needed, but it's still like, that's your baby, you know, that's your concept. And so it's challenging because you can't really walk away from it.
No, yeah.
Which is a crazy thing. I can't,
but it's just like one of those things. It's like, if I was to walk away from it, I'd just give it to, you know, somebody or just dismiss it, you know, it's going to be on a happy note. And you know, shout out to everybody who's like, who bought a shirt, bought anything, came to the event, whatever, you know, I just wanted to put a positive message out there.
Yeah,
because that's it.
And you can also tell, you know, the sincerity that you had behind it, because like you said, you were cautious and concerned about, okay, here I am as a Black man presenting this work about Black women and this ode to Black women. But even, you know, your show in Oakland was at a Black woman-owned gallery, you know, Betty Ono's owned by Black women. And so that was also seemed to be quite intentional.
Yeah. Everything is intentional with this. Mm-hmm. There's not going to ever be no mix-ups, I'm telling you. Like, even when I'm, like, making stuff, I kind of ask. I go to a couple of folks, be like, hey, what do you think about this? You know,
yeah.
You test it out or, what? You know, is this corny? Would this be corny? It's always a question. Something involved.
And what was some of the feedback you got from folks who were coming through the show in Oakland?
I mean, they loved it. It was motivating for a lot of people. A lot of men were just like totally just motivated. And on top, Oakland has a crazy, amazing art community. Like, especially with Black women and queer, LGBT, like. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just huge. It's like great big market, you know? And so for all of that to be in one room at one time, it was just, the energy was just like through the roof.
Let's talk about the pillowcase, because I hollered when I saw it. Because I was just like, dang, like, you Black women in silk pillowcases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's important. I sleep with a satin pillowcase. Shout out to white people who don't know what the satin pillowcase is. Like, I had this one homie. He was like, ha, you're selling pillowcases.
They wouldn't get it.
And I was like, you know, this is why the message say, if you don't understand, then it's not for you.
Amen to that.
You know, that's the little message behind the purchase. You know, if it's in there, you know, it just had to be done. I just thought it was cool.
It was. And the curation was also rather on point as well.
Oh man, shout out.
We're just gonna leave that there.
Shout out to Zaddy, Zaddy Bread.
So, you're a photographer. You're from St. Louis. Mm-hmm. You live in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And you were in Colorado in between that, right?
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about that, because I think it's really interesting. On our very first episode of the podcast, we were talking about millennials and how they say we're so different from our parents' generation. And so, you know, in our lifetime, I think our parents may have averaged 2 to 3 jobs. And then for millennials, we're projected to average anywhere from like 6 to 11 jobs.
Right.
And we travel and we don't stay at the same job for a long time, all these different things. So just kind of like, I mean, you're at VSCO, right? Mm-hmm. But just kind of talk to me about what life has been like, you know, shifting from your hometown to 2 very different places, Colorado, mm-hmm. Oakland, you know.
Well, you know, I still can't believe I live in California. That's kind of crazy to me to like think about. I say this like all the time. I don't know, being from St. Louis, a place where it's like a lot of opportunity in St. Louis, but you just really have to go get it. You can't wait on nothing in St. Louis because it can come to you. And I had posed a question not too long ago. I was like, do you believe in luck when it comes down to like career, like your career, or like just like what you do in your life? Is it luck, or is it that you grind really, really hard? And I got a lot of great feedback from that. And
was this on Twitter?
It was at work, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was just talking about it at work. It was just at work. And it was crazy to hear like the responses. I work with majority white folk, and we have to work 10 times harder than anybody to receive any type of attention or love, you know?
Black folks,
yeah. Yes. And so I didn't think that, I don't think like a lot of things come from luck, you know, honestly. No. I think it's like grind.
Absolutely.
With us.
100%.
And I wouldn't necessarily say it's luck for them either, because in a way that they had a lot of shit already planned out and give it to them.
Right.
So they ain't have to worry about nothing.
Right.
So shit, if we can say luck, I ain't gonna say it's luck. Like damn, my grandma ended up saving $100,000. You know what I'm saying? So I'm lucky that she saved $100,000, you know,
right,
real quick. And, you know, like that. But at the same time, for me, I still can't believe I'm here. It was a thing where I was like, oh, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going.
Which was what?
Pepsi. This is in 2012. I quit my job.
What were you doing at Pepsi?
Working in the warehouse.
Okay.
Yeah, just warehouse.
In St. Louis?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about it. Tell your story. I think that
was
hard.
It was rough because I was a creative at heart, and I knew I was at the time. I knew I was a creative. I knew what I liked. I knew what I wanted to do. And I wasn't going to get there doing a job inside of a little shack.
Right.
So I ended up getting this crazy opportunity.
It's great that I appreciate you sharing that, or allowing me to press you on that, is because like it almost feels like we live in like this like strange but really fantastical like warp zone. Yeah,
people don't like talking about their past.
That's yeah, because it's just kind of like, you know, you meet a person at a certain point, or you think you know them because of what they carry and what they give to you on social media.
Look, I used to work at White Castle. I had all the Air Force Ones.
Come
every
on now.
Friday, we get paid hella good. My first job, I was a goddamn actor at a haunted house. I was a dead baby. I was popping out of a damn cradle.
You had a fake blood?
It was crazy. I had some weird jobs, but
I did too, shoot.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna make it seem like I this is me all the time. The best thing I did, like I'm not the best thing I did, but in college, it was three friends.
And college was where?
University of Missouri, St. Louis. Three friends, we had started this, we started Made Monarchs. And Made Monarchs, it was like a online magazine, online media company. And we like threw parties, cool parties in St. Louis and events and stuff like that. And then we started bringing artists in from different places. Stolly, Big Crit, Currency, Dom Kennedy. It was crazy. And that's kind of how like I knew what I wanted to do.
And what year were you a freshman in college?
Freshman in college in 2006.
Okay, so like 06 to 2010.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
That's incredible.
Yep. And we dissolved Made Monarchs in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those transitions are big. What were you studying at?
Sociology and photography.
Photography.
And women's and gender studies.
See?
Yeah.
It all comes together.
Right. Yep.
It all comes together. All right, so tell me about how you made that jump from
Yeah,
Pepsi.
So I just had the opportunity because I had brought Stolly. We had brought Stolly to St. Louis, and we stayed in contact. And I had got this crazy opportunity. I got hit up by his manager at the time to tell me that they were going on tour with Lupe Fiasco for the Tetso and Youth Preview Tour.
Hmm.
And they needed a tour photographer, and they asked me. And I was with Morgan, who's my wife, girlfriend at the time. We were in Chicago. I believe we was like at Giordano's or something.
Giordano's, shout out.
We was somewhere eating pizza. And I told her what just happened. And shit, I just remember her helping me write my letter right on the spot.
Your letter, 2 weeks notice?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yep.
And then what? The tour?
The tour was going to happen in 2 weeks.
Oh, also. Wow.
So it's just all lined up. God be knowing, man.
And man. Then how did you end up at VSCO?
And so I toured for 45 days.
Go ahead.
45 days, 35 cities. And during that tour, like, I was taking photos of Stolly. I had created a Tumblr for him to just basically track the days and try to get him on, like, a lot of blogs and all that type of stuff. Yada, yada, yada. We hitting up all these different cities. We going to all these different places. Beats by Dre, Sony. I'm meeting all these people that I've always admired here and there. Learning about them, learning about who I don't like in real life. When you meet them, you be like, "Ooh, you a whole different nigga, boy." Oh man!
Hello.
And I met a lot of people, and I was exhausted while doing this. Rapper life ain't the life that I want to live.
Okay.
Shout out to the rappers. Can't be you. I like you. I can't be you. You know, so it was crazy, and. During that time, like I said, I knew that I wasn't going to go back to a job eventually. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what my plan was. I was getting paid here and there. I was getting paid during the tour, but still, I was going to go back home as a freelancer. So I was freelancing for a whole year, 2014, pretty much all that year. I was like working contracting jobs and stuff like that. I applied. And then during the tour, backtrack, Morgan, I keep dropping his name, she told me about this app that allows you to edit your photos using presets, film presets, and it was VSCO. And so I downloaded the app. She bought me the preset packs, and I was like, damn, this is tight. I'm using it. I'm editing my photos. I'm doing all this cool stuff. And then when I got back, I was like, I'm going to look up some jobs for these motherfuckers. I'm going to see what they got popping. Mm-hmm. And I saw some openings at the time. I applied. I remember, I think I applied like in April or something like that of 2014. I didn't get the job.
Did they tell you didn't get a job or you just never
got
back?
The letter. Okay. I got the little rejection letter thingy. And then I applied again like months later. And in October, I had got a call during St. Louis Fashion Week. And it was about an email. It was about the job. And then it was about setting up a call about the position and all that. Long story short, I end up getting the job.
And then from...
And that's when I moved from St. Louis to Colorado Springs.
Okay.
At the Colorado Springs office, I was a curator for VSCO. Mm. And for those who don't know what VSCO is a photo company. We specialize.
Is it Visual Supply Co?
Visual Supply Company.
VSCO.
Yep. So V as in Victor. SCO.
I'm sure a lot of y'all listening probably have that app or use it. I don't use it very often, but when it first came out, I remember having it. And everybody was like, "Oh, you using VSCO filters?" Da, 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 da. Like it was high, especially I think when did I get Instagram? 2013 maybe. So it was definitely popping at that time.
We old, bro.
It feels like so much is happening in a short period of time.
Right.
So Colorado Springs.
Yeah, Colorado Springs was a crazy experience. It was very different. They didn't even think I was going to move. They didn't think I was going to take the job. Every time.
How do you know that?
Because he told me. He was like, "Man, we wanted you to accept really bad, and we were just surprised that you did," because I never heard of Colorado Springs. I didn't know what the fuck Colorado Springs was, but I was like, "Shit, y'all don't know me. I got an opportunity." And
the person who
I was with or who I've been with was definitely down and happy for me. And we had like a plan going. Shout out to planning with your significant other and making it work. And yes. It worked. And it's
working.
Excellent. Yeah, working.
Yes.
That shit is dope. And it happened, you know.
Do you think that them not thinking that you're going to move had anything to do with you being black?
Oh, damn right. I'm pretty sure. They probably wouldn't, like, want to say that. But at the same time, I asked them, like, I think it's because they knew like Colorado Springs was a different, it's a culture shock. It was different. They knew. I mean, coming from St. Louis, I mean, I don't think a lot of them been in St. Louis before, but it was definitely popping.
Had you been outside of St. Louis prior to touring with Stally?
Yeah, a few places, but not like as heavy. No. I hit Denver during a tour.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't hit Colorado Springs. Right. I hit Denver.
So, different, mad different. I mean,
they both still white. They're still white.
Different brand of white.
Different brand of white. It's almost like the bread, the different type of bread, the honey oat.
Or like the pure white bread.
Yeah, with the little yellow things in it. You're like, all what the hell that. Is this? Zesty shit in my bread.
I can't tell you the last time I've had white bread.
Good. Shout out to not eating white bread. That shit ain't real.
So, Colorado Springs, mm-hmm. We don't need to dwell on that. No. You were spreading your wings.
Yeah, I was traveling a lot during the Colorado Springs time anyways. I was traveling a whole lot. I went to Brazil that year. I went to Paris the same year. And the reason why I went to Paris is because I had produced a photo book on the protest in Ferguson. I was shooting Ferguson. Before I left St. Louis, I shot the protest in Ferguson. And then I was just sitting on these photos. And that's another reason why Visco, I was already on their radar, because they hit me up to do an interview for those photos. I was posting them on Visco, and I did like an interview with them alongside with a homie, Marcus Stabenow, who it was like a joint interview from both our perspectives and stuff like that from being on the grounds at the time. And then I was sitting on these photos, 2015 rolls around. I made a book. I was only going to do 50 copies. End up overselling, didn't know what the hell I was doing when I came down to producing and selling something. So I think I sold like 75. And that book got into the hands of some names or whatever.
Was it just Ferguson photos or?
Just Ferguson photos.
Okay.
Yeah, just Ferguson photos.
What was the name of the book?
My Lens, I Ferguson. It's a 40-page photo publication, self-published, of all the photos during the protests. Of the sides of the protests the media didn't speak and even try to speak on.
Right.
You know? And that's what the photo book shows.
And I mean, at the time, so for folks out there who don't know, because I think, you know, people just think St. Louis, Ferguson, like they're the same place, and they're not.
Yeah.
And so what was it like for you, you know, making, it's not that long of a trip, right?
Yeah, it's not long of a trip. You know, so I'll back up. St. Louis, Ferguson is St. Louis. Okay. Because it's a county.
Okay.
So it's just kind of like how Oakland, you have Richmond. Mm-hmm. And it takes like 15 minutes to get there or something. I don't know how long it actually takes. My University of Missouri, St. Louis is in Ferguson County. And it took me 12 to 15 minutes to get to school. My brother, he doesn't live in Ferguson. It's like St. Louis just has its like different like sub communities and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So that's just how it is. Okay. And I mean, it's definitely different from St. Louis City because the cops ain't shit.
In Ferguson,
right. like the cops ain't shit nowhere, for real. You know, shout out to the good ones. But it's just like, but there, it was way different out here. I mean, I'm talking about they pulling you over for like literally no reason. Like Ferguson County was sued because of them pulling people over for no reason, giving them tickets for just silly stuff.
Yeah, like they made an entire book out of the Department of Justice, DOJ's investigation into how they basically made a business out of profiting off of ticketing.
Traffic tickets.
Black folks
black,
in particular.
Black people mm-hmm. in St. Louis, in Ferguson. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a real deal. So, yeah, like, it was a hell of an experience. And so, like, to fast forward, I did this book, and I didn't think that I was going to, I only just trying to sell 50 copies of it.
But I mean, were you spending, what was that like? Were you, because it's also coming up on, I mean, it's June now, but mm-hmm. August will be 5 years.
Yeah.
And is that right? No, 4 years? 4 years.
2014
to 18.
Yeah, four years. Yep.
You know, were you spending nights out there, days, like,
I was spending days because at nighttime, that's when the police come out and make shit rowdy.
Yeah.
It was them that made, they were the newsmakers.
And were you by yourself?
I was by myself. The first time I went out there, it was me, Morgan, my best friend, John. We went out there during the day. And that was the first time I went out. And then the rest of the week, I was just going out there doing, like, you know, peaceful protests. I was out there one time at night, only one time at night during the time. So I couldn't tell you what was going on from my experience.
Yeah.
But the time I was out there at night, it was just a peaceful protest outside of Ferguson Police Department.
Right. And what did you see during the day? What were you hearing? What
just
were you
chants
feeling?
And prayer and, you know, people just rejoicing and just being together. You know, that was it. I mean, I got the photos to prove it. Like, a lot of praise. A lot of the photos that I have are taken of people praising with their hands up.
Can people still buy the book?
Yeah, it's you can purchase the book on PhotoEye. It's PhotoEye.com.
Okay. We'll make sure we link y'all to everything.
Yeah.
When this episode goes up.
Yeah, and so like a friend of mine at work told me about this opportunity called the Paris Photo Book Awards, where you can submit your book to like. The Paris Photo Book Awards is like one of the biggest photo book awards out there you can win. And I was shortlisted out of thousands of people from all over the world. I was like one of the, like, I think it was like about 30 of us or something like that. And I think they even like shortened it down to like 20 something chosen from all over the world. And my book was selected. And so I went out to Paris because of that.
One of the reasons why I love Adrian so much is that he's so humble. I had known him for, I don't know, months, maybe going on a year. And I was like, wait a minute, you got a book, bro?
Oh, I don't even know how he even brought it up.
I don't know either, but I was just like, yo, I'm just walking around meeting folks with books. But you know, you would never know. So that's, I just really appreciate that about you. And that's so much of the work that you do, or I would venture to say all of the work that you do is very honest work, you know, very sincere. And it also highlights things that, if it were not for people like you and other, you know, folks, black folks, would remain in the margins. You know, lifting up black women is not something that people do often. Lifting up positive imagery of black folks who they were felt threatened, who they were in danger. You know, they were not safe because of how the police were operating even before Mike Brown was murdered. You know what I'm saying? Like lifting up those images and putting them out on into the world, but then, you know, not even knowing at the time, but those images, like you said, were seen all over, not just St. Louis, not just the United States, but everywhere.
Everywhere.
And so that's really powerful.
Yeah. And I met during that experience a good friend, Stephanie Wash, another amazing black woman who works for ABC News. Stephanie is bomb. Stephanie got an Emmy Award, bro.
Wow.
Like, that's, she is super bomb. So I met her. And it was basically showing her the ins and outs of Ferguson. You know, when people were blocking off and barricading places. And I was like, come this way, go this way type stuff. It was just like that. Helping her with the scoops and introducing her to people and stuff like that. It was just dope. To then, that's where we met.
Mm-hmm. So I have one last question before the break.
Mm-hmm.
How has living out here, it's only been 2 years, which is also crazy because it just feels like, I don't know if you get this feeling, but sometimes a year feels like six.
Seven. Yeah.
Yeah. We here.
Yeah.
And so for whatever reason, just so much happens. I think that, I mean, I personally just have gone through a lot behind closed doors, you know, and have grown a lot, like how I am now and how I operate and how I think, how I move. Even how I feel about myself, how I love myself at 27 is very different than 25, you know, and that's very different than 23.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making a joke, but it's also going back, you know, touching on what you said, like you used to have all the Air Force Ones, you know, you still love sneakers, obviously, but you used to have the baggy jeans. You still got cornrows, but they look a little different than the cornrows you're rocking now, you know. So if I can paint a picture for y'all, Adrian's got on his tan shirt. So the black. Stacked on top of women, over top of a line, and then beneath that is breathing. Then he's got a nice open blue button-up, kind of like a royal blue. I got some socks on, some navy socks. Got a few different color palettes going on here. He's got some black trousers. These trousers, some back in the day might call them high waters. Maybe right. some still might, but it's a different aesthetic, right? Mm-hmm. Someone might be like, oh, you got the artsy look, or you got the hipster look, or whatever, however people want to classify it. But I say all that to you. Say that's not how you were, you know, dressing
in the past.
In the past. So how have you, you know, from even an aesthetic standpoint or a mental standpoint, emotional standpoint, how have you changed in these past few years? That's a really big question.
No, you're good. I just grown to be comfortable with myself. You know, honestly, I've always had a thing for fashion, clothes, music, just looks. And now I'm just really super comfortable with the style that I'm in and how I like to be seen as. You know, things are trendy. Things are still trendy, you know, to this day. So back in the day, I had locks. My hair was down my back. I had dreads. I was a typical St. Louis looking ass nigga. You know, I just flexed and styled in different ways. Others didn't, you know, I've always been around winners and cool people. And we were, like, people called us different because we weren't afraid to do things different. And so, like, that was just us. That was just me. It's been me for a very long time. And now, like, how I am now, it's just like, I'm just chilling. You know, I'm very comfortable. I'm a people person, but at the same time, it's just like I'm starting to transition over to like the whole introvert, you know, type vibe. Like my wife, that's where she is, and I'm more like leaning to. I still be out here and out and about, but at the same time, I know how to go home.
Right.
You know, and I know how to not have to stick around for a long time and things like that because. You know, I look at sometimes it's like nighttime, that's when stupid shit start happening. Mm. And so I just kind of want to go home anyways because I just, in my head, I'm like, oh, man.
You start having flashbacks.
Yeah. Not even that. Just not even like, not
I'll,
even
I'll
that.
I'll play with you. I'll yeah. play with you.
It's not even that. It's just more so like, just like, I just want to go home, you know, or just want to just be chill. Like, if I am out with friends or something like that, I just want to be like me, you, and two other people.
Right. I'll never forget. So I came over to Adrian and Morgan's house. The thing is, like, me and Adrian be on the same wavelength. We just, without even knowing it. So I'm over there, and Morgan's cousin was in town with her baby, and, you know, baby Emery's chilling. So it was only, like, five of us, right? Four adults, maybe?
Yeah. It's a lot of people.
And... at some point Adrian goes missing, and I'm just like, I was like he's in the bathroom, but he's not in the bathroom.
Yeah,
like,
our apartment little as hell too, y'all. So look, I ain't nowhere to go but kitchen, and the kitchen living room is together, and then you go across and it's like you're in the bedroom, and the bedroom has the bathroom in it.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there, I said, where did Adrian go? And after, like, it wasn't really 20 minutes, it was a little while. And he just reemerges. So then I was like, whatever. I didn't think much of it at the time. And then I go home. I'm on Twitter. Adrian's one of my... I really enjoy reading your tweets. I don't think I ever told you that, but...
I can tell because you like everything late, because I feel like you just catch up on everything, because you're not on it like that anyway.
Nah, that's what I do.
I feel like you like kind of just look up my tweets and stuff like that. I think it's funny as hell.
Sometimes when I log on, they're just there. Okay, just there. Yeah. And then I'll be like, let me see what he's been tweeting at for like the past 3 days. Because mm-hmm. I don't really use Twitter like that. Like, I was tweeting today, and one of my friends was like, oh, so you just getting the tweets off today, huh? And I was just like, you know, I just had some things to say. Nothing particular. Shout out to Quinta. My homegirl Quinta is the neighbor baddie, the nosy neighbor baddie in the new internet video.
Word.
I was tweeting about that and got that got a little, a lot of folks were showing their love. But anyways, so I see Adrian's tweet. What did you say exactly?
I don't even remember.
He was like, had to disappear. Too many people in the house.
Yeah, I was in the bathroom.
That was so crazy.
I was just hiding, man, real quick.
So you like to be in the house. I like to be in the house a lot more than I used to as well.
Yeah. But then occasionally I do like to get out and just chill with a homie and just have like amazing conversation. Last night I was just chilling in my homie house, fresh daily, and then I just picked up my phone out of nowhere to check in. I was like, hey, I'll be home in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Call my wife, because it was like 10 when I left.
Okay.
So it's already late, but the baby was going to sleep on her way to sleep, so it was just like a good time to get out just real quick. Yeah. And we just meeting up.
Especially because, I mean, regardless, like, you're pretty much waking up, going to work, coming home, you know, the home life, good life.
Right.
And then sometimes, you just want to breathe or something.
Right.
Step out.
Yeah.
I feel that.
It's real quick.
I do. Well, we'll be back. All right, so if you're just tuning in, I'm sitting here in East Oakland live with Adrian Walker, photographer, good friend of mine. Some of y'all may have seen his work. Is it A.O. Octavius?
A. Octavius W.
Dang, see?
No, it's all good, because I have to say it slow. So A, my first name, Adrian. Octavius, middle name, O-C-T-A-V-I-U-S-W, Walker.
Come on, you better spell. You better spell. So check him out on Instagram. So we're just a few days away from Father's Day. Adrian, this is your first Father's Day. I love your baby girl.
Thank you.
Baby Emery. We get to hang out soon. I'm really excited about that. But we're gonna play a game to kick this off. So I'm going to read a statement. Adrian has not heard any of these statements before, so these answers are not canned or pre-orchestrated in any way. Let's get it.
Mm-hmm.
When I was younger, I thought being a dad meant...
bills.
Okay. My craziest moment as a father was when
I was peed on.
Has that happened multiple times?
Just once.
Okay. Who is your favorite TV dad?
Oh, favorite TV dad. Probably Uncle Phil.
Okay. Why?
He took in a father. I mean, he was a father figure to a young man who thought or who looked at it. He didn't really have a father, and it was like, I mean, that episode. Come on, man, y'all already know what I'm talking about. You gotta cry. I'm about to cry right now. You know, that was just powerful. So I would say Uncle Phil, because of that damn episode,
yeah.
And just like how much he wanted Will to win. He always wanted Will to win, even though he was like, he get on his nerves a lot.
Right,
but
right.
At the end of the day, he wanted him to win.
Definitely.
And he took him in, too. Come on, man.
Big time.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Uncle Phil.
Rest in peace.
And you can totally take a moment for this. So what are three lessons that you've learned from fatherhood thus far?
Man, always be on time. Always be present and be ready.
I'm impressed because Adrian has only been a father for 6 months, right?
Five. Yep.
Not even six.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. So what do you think about, what are your thoughts about fatherhood in this current day and age?
Again, I can't believe I'm in Oakland. I can't believe like I'm married. I can't believe it. It's just like a figure of speech. It's like, damn, I was a person, or I was always a person where I didn't learn manifesting until 2-3 years ago. I don't know. Even when I was getting these opportunities and stuff like that, like, I guess, like, I can say, like, once I met Morgan and stuff like that, and really like putting stuff into like a plan and thinking things through, and she wrote out my 5-year plan literally on a chalk board, and I followed those things to do and ended up being in places. I was like, oh my God. Like, wow, this is how you do it.
So that's kind of what you mean by manifesting.
Right. And like, so to be a father, it's tight, man. I put on my calendar at work lunch with Emery. Because I go home during lunch and I just be chilling with her for like an hour or whatever. Just can't wait to get home and to be around my two favorite people. Just hanging with them and just chilling, or even just in the car. You know, I haven't sat in the front seat with Morgan and Hellas And then she hasn't sat in the front seat with me and Hellas. We, you know what I'm saying? We Uber driving each other, you know what I'm saying? Because she in the back with the baby. Right. You know, we just chilling. Like, we always want to be close to her no matter what.
Yeah.
And so, like, just the feel of that is just so dope. And the fact that we get to raise a person, like, to be better than us, to be whomever they choose to be, to do, like, incredible things and show them and put them in, like, in the positions to set them up for success and allow them to, you know, just parent someone to be better than us, like, to be better than, you know what I'm saying, and do things that our parents didn't do. Like, that's tight. That's incredible. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, I look forward to becoming a mother. I'm not there yet, but that's something that, again, like you said, it's like it's almost like a privilege, really.
To
be able to, I don't want to say like curate a person, mm-hmm. because your child is going to be who they're meant to be,
right.
But to really to help raise and foster and love one a human that you yourself had a hand in making is an incredible thing.
Yeah, because it's like going into like. It wasn't like a planned thing. We always talked about if we have kids, we just have kids. So, I knew Morgan wanted a kid. I wasn't against having a kid or nothing like that. It wasn't like I'm married. So it's just like whatever. Like I'm going to take care of business. You know.
Have you had any like oh shit I'm going to be a father moments like before Emery was born?
Oh, hell yeah.
What were those like?
Me and Morgan still said, we got a whole ass baby. Like she said all the time. Like, I remember saying that at work one time. I got a whole ass kid. This girl's like, I mean, you don't have half. you don't get it.
I love it. I love how much.
You don't get it, do you?
I've seen you love on Emery, aside from like the matching Vans,
nah, yeah,
and the sunglasses and the jean jackets.
I actually copied her for the sunglasses.
So. I mean, she's one of the flyest babies I've seen, but just that love that you have for her, mm-hmm. is really beautiful. And I think that I also have seen that. My brother has three kids now, but his first child was my niece. Mm-hmm. And I think that what are your thoughts about like?
That's another thing I didn't trip off of, if it was going to be a boy or girl. I knew it was going to be a girl, though.
Okay.
I said that. Morgan's the only human, only person to say she was going to have a boy.
Huh.
Only. And it was wrong. Morgan's always right. And I was finally right about something.
Okay.
Like, we're having a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a girl.
And so do you think that having a girl has taught you different things about what it is to be not just a father, but what it means to be a man?
Oh, yeah. You know, taking care of a woman properly, learning all of that, you know, and just more so like having a kid and being present at all of the appointments and stuff like that, learning more about the woman's body, like an anatomy and all this type of stuff. Like it's a grown up ass thing, you know what I'm saying? And I didn't know what to expect even being in the room during the delivery. You know, I didn't know. Like, I was in the delivery room. I was like, do I need to put on, like, a little suit? You know, because, on TV, they make it look like you got to put on a goddamn space outfit. I was in that mug with Morgan's Mizzou t-shirt on and some sweats.
Right.
Sweating. Yeah, I was wet, boy. But shout out to Morgan. She had Emery in 30 minutes.
That's crazy. I remember you said it was, like, a J. Cole album with no features. Like, it just happened.
There was no features, bro. None. No features, man.
What do you look forward to about being a father? Continuing to be a father.
Shit, man. Just seeing her grow. Seeing her become an awesome human. You know, an awesome woman. A black, strong woman. I want her to know what her name means. Even though it's like not like a... We don't have like a actual meaning behind her name. But it's the blackest name. My daughter's name is Emery Onyx Walker. I just want her to thrive, man. Just be great.
I dig that. Well, we'll be right back. Sometimes. going to wrap it up with Randy's Radar. This is a segment that Naeem and I started together. But again, sadly, since I'm flying solo, it has become Randy's Radar. So I'm going to share with you three things, or with you all, rather, three things that are on my radar, and Adrian as well. So I'll let you go first, Adrian.
So three things that are on my radar. Traveling with my family, of course, and that's like getting Emery's passport. Being in nature more and just getting out and just being around fucking Earth. And the third thing is like a personal thing for me, is I want to really get into music and learning how music, like beats and all that type of stuff.
Okay.
I feel like I want to like not transition from photography, but I want to include music instrumentation over my photos, something like that. It's something I've been talking about for the longest. I just haven't done it.
I feel that. Yeah, I'm trying to learn how to skateboard at 27.
Ooh, I ain't ready.
My ankle wasn't ready. I'm still recovering.
I can't skate. I can't. I got to learn how to swim. Swimming, that's the fourth one.
Yes. So that leads into the first thing on my radar is summer. And I say that because even though it is June, out here in the Bay Area, the weather is not like L.A.
Nah, man.
It is not L.A.
Hey, y'all. LA. Let me tell y'all something. California is not L.A. And when y'all hit up and be like, yo, bro, I'm going to be out there. All right, cool. When? So-and-so. Where you going? L.A. I don't live in L.A.
It's not close.
God damn,
it's
y'all.
Close, it's not close. It's close on a plane. It's
no,
far.
People, everybody think L.A. is California.
Like it's around the corner from Oakland.
No, people don't think about Oakland. Right. They think California is L.A., I mean.
That's all there is to
I'm like, y'all don't know what the Black Panthers are, y'all. They know what the Black Panthers are, but Oakland ain't got nothing to do with them.
Right. So listen, Adrian and I are sitting here right now in June. It's 64-degree weather. And so, yeah, we have jackets on. We have pants on.
It's perfect weather here for to get them fits off.
I mean, yeah, but I'm saying this. Summer is on my radar because I'm from D.C. And yeah, because I'm used to not having, I don't like wearing jackets.
Right, I love wearing jackets.
Anytime we hit the J month, not January, but June, you know what I'm saying, July, I don't want to be wearing no jackets.
Right.
So summer's on my radar. And also speaking about swimming, this is a PSA. 50% of African Americans do not know how to swim.
Yep.
And so that is a huge number. We drown often. There's all this historical context. Maybe I'll do a quick little side episode to educate y'all, to help us understand why so many of us don't swim and why we have this generational fear of water. So we'll get to that. I might do that for y'all. So Adrian wants to learn how to swim. I'm down to help him. We can take Emery to the pool.
Emery already swim better than me.
See, she's a beast. She's such a beast. One of the other things on my radar, speaking of water, is Flint, Michigan. They are still very much in dire need. I want to just give a huge shout out to Little Miss Flint, Mary Copenny, who's 10 years old and has been just like incredible when it comes to everything that she's put into helping her people, helping her community. She's been on Twitter just like being like, at Walmart, can you match these donations? Can you give us a pallet of water? And I had an opportunity to spend 2 weeks in Flint over the past 2 years, seeing folks on the ground, distributing water, all those things. And unfortunately, like, just because we have a Black person in office doesn't mean that the person is ally or has the interests of Black people at heart. Mm-hmm. This is getting long. But basically, people in Flint don't trust the water still. The state is no longer providing or distributing bottled water in any capacity. People in Flint have water bills in the thousands and they're still being expected to pay them. And so I just want to put that out there for y'all to keep Flint on your radar, because it's so easy to just forget about all the things that we have that we're dealing with, and the oppression that we're dealing with here in these disunited states. So Flint's on my radar. And then lastly, I'm looking forward to reading a lot. And so the book that I'll probably crack open next, I'm making my way through Homecoming, Yagazi's Homecoming right now, but after that is a book called from Zora Neale Hurston about the story of Cudjoe Lewis, who is apparently the final slave ship survivor. Mm-hmm. So called Bear Coon. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, shout out Adrian. Thank you so much for joining me. It's special because Help Me Understand is back, and you brought in season 3, the beginning, with me.
I'm the first person?
Yeah.
Oh, dang, that's tight.
We out here.
Shout it out.